compiling formulas into object code. But it was the right patent. It didn't mention the term spreadsheet. It didn't mention the term natural order recalculation. It actually covers the algorithm known as topological sort, which is what you use to figure out the proper order for recalculating the cells in a spreadsheet, among other things. The patent listed dozens of different ways you could try to implement topological sort, each way separately, one after the other. So many different rearrangements to try to make sure that there was no remaining way to implement topological sort that wasn't listed in this patent. It didn't mention the term topological sort, even though that name had been in use since 1963. So if you had been searching for patents that might apply to spreadsheets, you would not have found out about this one unless you heard about it from somebody who was being sued. But you find out about lots of patents, and then you have to figure out what they mean. And that's the really hard part, because patents are written in twisted legal language, and nothing means what you think it means. So it's the only way to figure out just what this patent prohibits you from doing is to spend a lot of time talking with a lawyer. And that's going to cost a lot of money, too. And eventually the lawyer will say, if you do something in this area, you'll probably lose the lawsuit. If you do something in this area, there's a substantial chance of losing the lawsuit. And if you want to be really safe, stay out of this area. But note, there is a considerable element of chance in the outcome of any lawsuit. Even the people who own the patents often can't tell what they mean. In the 1980s, one Paul Heckel developed a program and got a couple of patents on some ideas used in this program, which I can't describe to you. I once spent an hour looking at claim number one of one of those patents, trying to think of a simple way I could describe what it covers. And I could not. I could not find anything simpler than repeating the claim, slightly paraphrased. And that's just too complicated for one to hold in one's mind. Anyway, when he first saw HyperCard, it didn't look anything like his program to him. Overall, HyperCard's not similar to his program. It didn't occur to him that his patents might apply to HyperCard, but his lawyer said that they did, at which point he started threatening Apple, and then when that didn't produce an immediate response, he started threatening Apple's customers, because it's not just the developer, it's the users as well that can be sued. And I believe that they made some kind of settlement, but the details are secret. That's usually the case. When people are threatened using software idea patents, they usually make a settlement in secret, and we don't know what's going on. The victims are afraid to talk about it, sort of like the victims of child abuse. They're told, don't tell anybody what I'm doing to you. And they're really scared to say. Anyway, once I gave this speech, and Paul Heckel was in the audience, and he jumped up and said, "That's not true. I just didn't know the scope of my protection." And I said, "Yes, that's what I said." At which point he sat back down and didn't say another word for the rest of my speech. If I had said no, he probably would have argued with me. But when I said yes, he was at a loss. So, the result is that the patent system fails to achieve one of its supposed goals, which is to disseminate knowledge of new techniques. The fact is, people don't read patents except to figure out the bad news. Nobody reads a patent to try to learn about anything. The only reason you read a patent is to see whether your program's illegal. So, it's going to take a lot of work with the lawyer before you get this vague picture of what is more or less likely to be prohibited. And at that point, what are your options? Well, for each patent, there are three things you can try to do. One is avoid the patent. That means don't use the idea. The second is get a license for the patent. And the third is overturn the patent, prove it's invalid under the legal criteria. Each of them might or might not be possible based on independent details of the situation, which means that sometimes none of them is possible, and when that happens, your project is dead. So let's look at these three options. First one is avoid the patent. Don't use that idea. Well, sometimes that's easy. If the patent covers one algorithm to do a job, but there's another algorithm to do the same job, so you use the other. Fine. Problem solved. But sometimes there's only one algorithm to do the job. Consider, for instance, the LZW data compression algorithm. In 1984, the Compress program was written and released using the LZW compression algorithm. The author of the program had seen this algorithm in a journal article. This is back when we thought that the purpose of journal articles was to show you techniques you could use in your programs. And in 1984, there was no problem with this. There was no patent on that algorithm then. But in 1985, a patent was issued. The patent holder was clever. The patent holder, Unisys, didn't immediately warn everybody. They let things go for a few years, figuring they would give people a chance to dig the hole deeper so that they couldn't get out of it. So by the late 80s, early 90s, they were starting to threaten people. So in the GNU project, we decided to find some other way to do data compression. We asked people, can you contribute? And somebody said, yeah, I've been developing another data compression program for a year. I'll give it to you. And we were 1 week away from releasing it when a patent was issued on that algorithm. So that program was killed before it was born. Eventually, someone found another algorithm, the GZIP algorithm. And we released that program. It's not patented, and everybody switched to GZIP. It even does better compression and runs faster. So you might think that we solved the problem completely. Well, we did, as far as concerns people who want to compress their files. If a person has a file and wants and thinks, I want to compress this, at that point he can choose any data compression program. So if he knows that people might get in legal trouble if they use compress, but GZIP is safe, he chooses GZIP because he can choose. All he wants to do is compress his file. But the same LZW compression algorithm is also used in GIF files. Of course, people soon developed another image format called PNG for PNGs not GIF and said, hey everybody, you can get sued for using GIF files, switch to PNG format. So look around on the net. How many PNG files do you see and how many GIF files do you see? We've been urging people for more than 10 years to switch away from GIF format, and still most of them have not switched. Because they don't start thinking, I have an image, I want to compress it. They think, I want to post my image in a format that programs handle, that people normally use. And what they've heard of and what they know will work and what they know how to make is PNG, it is GIF. So we went to the web browser developers and said, will you please support ping format? And they said, why should we support it? Nobody's using it. And we went to users and said, please post your images in ping format. And they said, I can't do that. The browsers don't support it. Nobody was in a tremendous hurry. It's like trying to convince everybody in Hungary to speak Basque. When there's a de facto standard, it's hard to get people to switch, even when using the standard is dangerous, even when some people will get sued, because the other people think, well, I'm too small, why would they sue me? And they don't bother to change. And this crowd carries along those who are in danger. So in over 10 years, despite various campaigns, including Burn All Gifts Day, we have been unable to get the community to change to another superior compression format. At least we thought we can use JPEG format. Except now, a year or so ago, a patent turned up covering JPEG format, and now people are getting sued in the US for that. So this shows you how much trouble it can be when there's one patent covering one part of a de facto standard. But that's just a small instance of the problem. Consider MPEG-2 video. That's covered by 39 different US patents. It took longer to negotiate an arrangement by which there was even a possibility of getting a license for all these patents than it took to develop the standard. So sometimes you just can't avoid one specific algorithm because it's the only way to carry out the standard. Nobody has ever found a way to make a real compressed GIF file except by using LZW. You can use another compression algorithm, but then you get a different kind of file and the same program can't play it. And what if you want to implement the PostScript? Well, the PostScript language specification includes an operator to do LZW compression. You could provide a different operator to do compression with a different algorithm. If people might find it useful, but it doesn't fit the specs of PostScript. Fortunately, that hasn't hurt us too much because the patent only covers compression, not uncompression. So our free implementation of PostScript can include the command to uncompress, and people usually don't tell the printer to compress things. They usually only tell the printer to uncompress things. So the result is, although we fail to implement this completely, our program luckily manages to be useful enough anyway. But, you know, when you give up enough features that the users expect, eventually they start saying your program is no good. When a feature is patented, the only way to avoid the patent is don't provide the feature. Around 1990, the users of the word processor Zyrite got a downgrade in the mail. The downgrade removed the feature because it was patented. The feature was you could define an abbreviation. You could say these few letters are an abbreviation. When I type these letters followed by punctuation, replace them with this text. Somebody got a patent on that in the mid-80s and started making threats against the developers of Zyrite. And eventually they decided to take the feature out. So they sent the users a downgrade. But first, they considered trying to get a patent license. But when they negotiated with the patent holder, he kept changing his demands. And eventually they decided it was impossible to negotiate with him. And then they thought for a while about challenging the validity of the patent, and that's why they wrote to me. You see,